You're listening to New Hampshire Now.
Welcome back. You're on New Hampshire Now. 1-9-1450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan. I appreciate you joining us for the program. This hour of New Hampshire Now is presented by Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. And this segment of the show brought to you by Cheney's Apple House Furniture. Don't you dare buy furniture without checking out Cheney's always low prices. To peruse their selection, go to nhfurniturestore.com. Joining us right now inside the Concord Photo Service Main Street studio is Captain Tim Robinson with the Concord Fire Department, and he has just returned from Houston, Texas, where he was a part of search and some rescue operations in Houston, obviously in the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey. And we're honored to be joined by him on the program right now. Captain, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Appreciate you joining us for the program. So first off, just kind of take us through what it was like being down there. This is not your first time that you've been engaged in this type of activity, and you have obviously the training and background to do so. Take us through what it was like being down there and what you were confronted with.
It was pretty interesting. It was a wide area. I was unaware of how big Houston was, and obviously the disaster was much bigger than just the Houston area, but we were assigned to a division or geographic area in Houston, was where we did most of our work. And even getting to and from that area from where they had a stage, you know, was almost an hour every day. We saw many, many areas that were flooded or were actively flooding. They were still controlling water coming out of levees. And, you know, sometimes that required them to flood neighborhoods that hadn't been flooded yet, or you know, there was a lot of water management so the levees wouldn't break and create a bigger disaster than it already occurred. I didn't know this until I got there. Houston's actually below sea level, kind of like New Orleans, and so I was unaware of that. We did water operations on one day. We searched an area in Bears Bayou. They had been a report from a helicopter that they thought somebody had been stuck in some debris. We didn't find anything, but that was the only water operation we did. The rest of the operation was more of a, we call it wide area search, but it's basically going house to house in a neighborhood and checking on people and seeing if there's houses where there's no activity and what happened to those people. And the neighborhood that we'd worked in first and we spent the primary focus on was a very poor neighborhood. And they had probably about 8 feet of water in most of the neighborhood. And I got to say, the people that didn't have very much to begin with had pretty much lost everything were extremely happy to see us and were thanking us for being there. And, you know, I don't want to say positive, but they were at least positive that we were there checking on them and also helping us, you know, direct us to areas that people they were concerned about or they hadn't seen since the flood.
Now, I think that is something that, you know, most people, you know, cannot imagine that type of circumstance where you have, you know, an individual who has lost everything and they can't imagine what it's like to be, you know, the rescuer in that moment where they're coming to, you know, to provide aid. What is the feeling like, you know, when you're going from house to house and, you know, what's, you know, on your mind and also the feeling that you get when, you are able to find someone and help them?
I mean, it's not much different than the work we do every day here, mm-hmm. you know, with the feelings and stuff like that. Obviously, with knowing the level of the flood and the devastation that was there, you know, you're always concerned you're going to find people that are deceased when you're
right.
You know, when you're looking into buildings and stuff.
But you did not.
We did not. It was a couple of buildings that we did have to look through. We had the DHS, Federal Air Marshals, with us as our force protection. They were this when we went and entered buildings. But they had, at some point, I think, had a PSA where they had told people to, like, tie a white sheet outside mm-hmm. or onto something. So there was a couple of houses that still had those out in front of the house, and there was no activity around the house, so we had to go in and search those. And again,
so when you say go in and search those, there's 8 feet of water. How would you go in? These are different than the ones with the water? Or how do you go in and search a house that is flooded?
The water had receded in the neighborhood where we were searching. So when we're doing the wide area search and ground search, is all in areas that the water had already receded. So those areas had flooded early on. If you'd watched the news, anybody saw where they were talking about Tidwell Road and they were having some looting and
yeah.
some issues with they were actually firing at some of the high water vehicles from the police. It was kind of in that same neighborhood. where we were looking, and there was a high concern for particularly for the residents in the area because of the amount of water that was there. That was one of the first areas to really receive a deluge of water into the neighborhood, and the Houston Fire Department, Houston Police Department were extremely concerned about those neighborhoods and had us go through and check them out.
Do you, as a rescuer in those instances, do you get, you mentioned, you know, the looting and that had taken place, do you get concerned at times about how you're going to be, you know, received by individuals? I mean, sometimes these folks haven't eaten. They're desperate. And I can only imagine what's going through an individual's mind when you've lost everything and you've been waiting for, you know, a rescuer. Are there circumstances where you find people that are, you know, that are sort of in a state of panic or mania?
I think the information that we got from the police department and the fire department were important, just so we had that in the back of our minds. But you can't, what had happened during the actual, when the neighborhood was actually flooded in the early hours after the, you know, after that, you can't, you know, I don't say prejudge people on that, but, you know, it's a different day. It's a sunny day. The water's receded.
Right.
You have to kind of go in there with a mindset that I have this in the back of my mind. I know there can be some safety concerns here, but we have some, you know, we have force protection with us from the federal air marshals. So those guys were extremely helpful. I mean, they folded right in with us and helped do the searches and stuff. They were, you know, we needed some translators. One of them was our Spanish translator.
Sure.
I got to say that, you know, once we started really talking to the residents of the neighborhood, and even the fire department down there told us that, you know, they're usually well received by those residents. It's just the police department that's not, so.
Okay, that's Tim Robinson, captain with the Concord Fire Department, joining us here on the Hampshire Now program. We're inside the Concord Photo Service Main Street studio, and he's talking about his time down in Houston as part of a search and rescue efforts following Hurricane Harvey. How long were you down there for?
I was gone a total of 10 days. It was about 36 hours of transportation down and then 3 days to return. So we were on the ground five and a half days in the Houston area. We actually went to College Station, Texas first to kind of check in and then get reassigned. We were essentially assigned to the city of Houston the whole time.
So when you're in a crew, you mentioned you had, you know, air marshals. How many people are in a crew that's going house to house for rescue operation?
It all varies depending on the mission. This particular mission, we participate in the FEMA's urban search rescue system. So we, the three of us who were down in Texas, were part of the team that's out of Massachusetts. two of us went as part of it was a new program called the Mission Ready Package for Water Rescue.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only 16 people that responded in that team from Massachusetts. Sean Brown responded as part of the incident support team, and he's down in Irma now, and I believe he's in Florida.
So he went. He went from Chief Andrews wasn't sure if he would be if any of you guys would have to go back into Irma, and so Sean Brown is down in Florida now.
Yeah, he actually works in an overhead team.
Okay.
Where that's what his role was in these two disasters.
Logistics.
He does logistics work, but there's a team that supports the teams that go out.
Okay,
so he's in the team that supports the teams that go out in both of these cases. Captain Kelleher and I went as from Concord Fire down with the Massachusetts team. Like I said, there was only 16 of us. This was the first time they ever tried these mission ready packages.
Mm-hmm.
There's 28 teams in the federal system. All 28 teams had some portion of their team working down in the Houston area, which is highly unusual. So the only other time all 28 teams have been out at the same event was the World Trade Center.
Wow, and we'll get into, you know, kind of your takeaways from how, you know, the response was handled, how you saw it firsthand, and so forth in a second. But, you know, we've obviously transitioned in the national media from Harvey to Irma, and, you know, for me as an individual who spent a tremendous amount of time on St. Thomas and also down in Fort Myers with the Red Sox, I've been following that very. Very closely because of friends and family members in both places. So from Harvey's perspective, though, you mentioned the fact that there was 8 feet of water has in some areas. Has the water completely receded in Houston, or are there still areas that are underwater? And how long do you think it will take for there to be you know, a recovery in Houston?
The certain areas of Houston had the water had receded, like I said, even prior to our operations.
Right.
There were other areas because of levee control and water control where they were actually getting inundated with water while we were there. And even on the way out when we were leaving, we had to go kind of around to drive around Beaumont because of the devastation that was in Beaumont,
right,
and go through Port Arthur. We went through a small town where they were still that town had been flooded several times during this event to release water to protect the levee. So there was still water being let into that neighborhood as we were leaving. I would imagine that, you know, within a couple weeks, most of the water will be controlled as long as they don't get more rain from another event. I mean, they had 52 inches of rain,
yep,
which is absolutely unusual for the Houston area. And I don't think we would even survive well if we had 52 inches of rain in a day and a half or 2 days. You know, there's a lot of areas for that water needs to go, and you can't store it all. And as far as recovery goes,
and yeah, just on that, I mean, this is, you know, not your area of expertise, but you know, I think, you know, most people wonder what's going to happen to the folks. You mentioned that they lost everything. You went into homes, and the individual had lost everything. And so what happens to them over this to move forward? What FEMA obviously comes in. There's other recovery efforts. So what a person loses everything. What happens to that family? Where do they stay, and how do they you know, begin again for that aspect of the process?
It's not really the part of FEMA that we're involved
right,
with. So I don't really know. Sometimes we'll hand out numbers for disaster assistance, but the local authorities obviously had shelters open and available
right,
while we were there, including they were also had areas for rescue for large stock that had been rescued and everything else. So I mean, they had the system kind of figured out. The state of Texas has done a great job of having a great emergency plan, and unfortunately, they probably had more opportunities to exercise it than other places in the country.
I assume people would stay in. Obviously, you mentioned there was the shelters, and there's going to be, you know, the process of individuals gaining the money back from what they have lost, and hotels, and from my past reading of this, they stay in hotels, family, and then, you know, when the opportunity presents itself there and receive their funding, they can either fix the home if it's fixable, or, you know, they'll have to find another place. But it seems like from what you're describing, there are going to be entire neighborhoods that they're just going to have to start from scratch, essentially, right?
The houses will have to be gutted.
I mean,
obviously, mold concerns and stuff, you know. And I have to say that when we were even going through the neighborhoods, you know, a day or two after they had water in them, that people were already removing sheetrock and removing carpets and furniture that had been destroyed. So they were, you know, they were already on their way to starting the process to get the house dried out and to be able to get out the damaged portions of the home. As you were saying with Irma, my biggest concern with the whole thing is, you know, right after Katrina, there wasn't a next big event, you know, within a
right,
week. And my concern is, I mean, some of the neighborhoods we saw are obviously devastated, and the people really don't have the means to redo their homes on their own, is that they'll be forgotten in with the
right
recency of the Irma event right behind it.
And I worry about, you know, the folks on St. Thomas and St. John who have just been completely devastated, and the infrastructure there is problematic to begin with, and they're on an island. I mean, I'm worried about folks starving to death and the water and all that. It takes a long time generally for things to take place. Now the hospital had its roof blown off, and they had to fly individuals from St. Thomas to St. Croix who were in the hospital. I could only imagine what that was like. I mean, I have a concern that those people are going to get forgot because of Florida and Harvey. It's just a huge conglomeration of these type of events, and people on St. Thomas, a lot of them don't have really anything to begin with, and the entire economy, or almost the entire economy, is geared towards tourism, and you lose a whole, you know, season of tourism because the resorts and the infrastructure are really, I don't see how it's going to be able to support tourism. So these events are just, you know, horrific, and all the way around, and very different too, because the wind was the big factor in Irma, both in Florida and in the Virgin Islands. And the flooding was obviously the significant issue in Houston.
Yeah, we didn't see the wind impacts that we've seen in other events. We did not see those in the areas that we were in Houston. It was definitely the flooding was the biggest challenges in the at least in the metro Houston area. Like I said, the Harvey was a very big event, went over a wide area of Texas, and I only saw a very small slice of that pie. We probably saw some of the most stricken neighborhoods as far as flooding, as well as neighborhoods that didn't have a lot to begin with, out of what anybody saw. But there again, it was just a different type of event. All these events we can prepare for, and we have operational plans for, but they all, at the end of the day, have their own characteristics. They have right. their own challenges, and our teams have to be able to adapt to those when we arrive at them.
In concluding, what were your biggest, takeaways from this? The things that, you'll tell your kids and grandkids moving forward about, how you responded and engaged in what was going on there, A. And B, there's a tremendous amount of planning and training that goes into and logistics and outreach structure that goes into these types of events and responding to it. And it seemed from watching media reports that the response was just fabulous. There were some initial problems with 911, which I think need to be addressed both here in New Hampshire and so forth, where I think if a person calls 911, we should have the infrastructure in place where there's a person who, answers the phone, whether it's in, Topeka, Washington, or the place where it's yeah. taking place. But early on with the governor wanting there to be a mandatory evacuation and the Houston mayor not wanting it to be, but after those things, it seemed like everything went pretty much according to plan, as much as you can plan.
As far as your first part of your question, I guess what I would tell my kids is, at the end of the day, it's people helping people. I mean, there's a lot of training and things you need to do to do the things that we do, or be prepared to do the things that we were there to do. But at the end of the day, the connections made, even in brief encounters with people, and they were so appreciative that we were there, made the whole, it was 1,900 miles to drive down.
And you had to be away. Your kids were going back to school,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. My kids were going back to school. I've got a son that's going to basic training next week.
Yeah.
So it was the timings on these events are never good.
Right.
And to spend 10 days away from your family is always a difficulty, especially when it's kind of unplanned. But my kids understand. They understand the importance of it. I've been to Hurricane Sandy and responded to Irene in Vermont with the team and several other events. And so they kind of understand what it's about. And I think they understand that it's something bigger than
right.
just us and just them and even just this community. I mean, it's great that the Chief Andrus and the department allow us to participate in the team and for us to get these experiences, but also it's a way for our community to give into the whole
yeah.
system. And
it's special too. I mean, an individual like yourself, it allows you to live in the community that you want to live in and be a part of this community. But also, when your skills are required, you can be a part and lend those skills to, some of the major and most significant recovery efforts in the nation.
The other part of that is the experience that we gets brought back to the community.
Right.
So, in any of these, we've had up to 5 or 6 people on the team before. And again, it allows us to bring back experience and training that is very difficult to get in other places, and really
you can only get like training like this firsthand. Like there's, you can do yeah. and you can speak to this better than I can, but you can get, you can train for this type of event, but you really only know how to respond and how to deal with things when it's actually happening.
Yes. Hopefully we never have to experience the events like
right.
this here, but if it does happen, at least we've had some people that have a set of experiences to draw from in order to come up with different plans and be able to, to think about things as they arise. As far as the overall response, it's very hard for me to comment on. Once we got deployed, we didn't get to really see a lot of news. We were kind of quartered in a high school, and we didn't really have access to, we had a little access to our phones and social media, but really to watch, CNN or any of the other major outlets, we didn't have any time or opportunity to do that. So I mean, we were quartered essentially on air mattresses and cots in a classroom in a high school's, and luckily they were able to bring in laundry service and food service and things like that to support us within a couple of days of being
there. Did you get any good barbecue?
Not while we were there, no.
I didn't think so.
But I got to say that we were driving around, and obviously some of our equipment's in Massachusetts on it, and people were beeping their horns and wave, you know, and giving us a thumbs up. And I was just impressed by the response of the residents in that whole area, that, you know, that they were happy to know that there was people from so far away. You know, as we quartered up with people from Washington State, so they're just about as far apart as you can get in the system. And they actually, it was a little bit further for them to get to Texas than it was for us.
It sounds weird, as I mentioned before. And, you know, the first and foremost thing is you have to, thoughts, prayers, pay homage to the individuals who've sacrificed, individuals like yourself who've gone down there. But the hurricane itself was horrific. The devastation was horrific. But the aftermath of it, particularly in what we have gone through in this country and a lot of the divisiveness that's been at play on the national and local political scenes, it was special to see the response from individuals like yourself, and, you know, everyday people who, you know, were bringing their boats in and were, you know, teenagers who were helping in rescue. And it didn't matter if the individual was of a different race or ethnicity, if they were of different sexual orientation, different religion, belief system. When there was help needed, one hand went forward, one hand came back, and the two met. And it was a special thing to see America come together as America in these times.
The people that respond their own boats, they were kind of colloquially called the Cajun Navy. And it was impressive to see the amount of people and the amount of effort and time that they had put into to being on site and to helping people. They actually were able to organize themselves through almost like a Nextel app on their phones, and they were able to they almost had like a normal emergency response thing where you have logistics and a little bit of planning, and, you know, the people doing operational work, they kind of set that stuff on their own, and they for the most part did good work. I mean, they did a lot of good work. I shouldn't say for the most part. They did a lot of good work. The only concerns are safety concerns.
Right.
And, you know, that we were dealing with moving water in some areas, and we did have a close call in the system. It wasn't with our team at one rescue event. And, again, you know, what's their experience level and what's going to happen to them? But
I think in those early hours, though, when before individuals like yourself could get down there, and it seemed like they were down some men, and then actually Texas, I don't know if it's Texas state government or Houston, were asking for people with boats to show up. I mean, that though, during those times when it's kind of the life and death situations, you're kind of about having people there to help.
They were tremendously helpful, and probably in the early times they had estimated, and this is, again, this is not official information, it just was an estimated thrown around, that they probably were rescuing five people, every one that was rescued by an official rescue organization, just because of the sheer numbers that were out there and available. And I don't think anybody would downplay the importance of their response in the whole event. They did a very good job. Again, it's just more worried about having to go rescue them,
right?
In situations where they're
once you folks arrive, I think that, you know, they need to take it. You know, they need to take it back step and say that, you know, you guys did a great job, but you want to have the safety of everyone involved being the first and foremost thing. And these are individuals who are just, you know, out there and helping and doing the best they could, but don't have the expertise and knowledge like you guys have.
And that's the design of our system, is really to relieve the local communities once we get there. I mean, our design, obviously, to come from Massachusetts, even the closest team, I think, that was a federal team operating there was from Missouri. And there wasn't a Texas team, because there's a federal team in Texas. But the job is really to relieve them and to relieve some of the pressure on them and to help them out. I mean, we really worked in buildings we searched and didn't search, and areas that we looked in and didn't look in, were really all at the pleasure of the city of Houston. We worked for the City of Houston Fire Department and Police Department. That was who we were assigned to. And like I said, we went as a water rescue team, and that wasn't necessarily the complete mission that we did. We did some other work that was outside of that that particular mission when we started doing the wide area search. But again, it was what the local community needed and wanted at the time, and that's what our job is to do, is to help them and to, you know, essentially multiply their force so that they can take some of the pressure off that force, so that, you know, they don't get hurt and they can get some rest, and they can then go back to, you know, resuming some of their normal operations. And it was just an honor to help them and to be able to go down there. And I, you know, we do it all again the next time they call.
Well, Captain Robinson, thank you so much for coming in this morning and sharing your experiences down in Houston. Thank you for the work you do and the sacrifices you made. And we'll catch up with you again soon.
Thank you.
All right, that is Captain Tim Robinson with the Concord Fire Department here on Hampshire Now. 139-1450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan. I appreciate you joining us for the program. This hour of Hampshire Now is presented by Prescription Center, and that segment of the show brought to you by Cheney's Apple House Furniture. We'll come back with more from the Concord Photo Service Main Street Studio after this.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now.
Well, I was born in a small town, and I live in a small town. Just what I want.